Blog Talk Radio.
Side Visions on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Brother Tony Bullock with my co-host, Sister Eileen Reed. Sister Reed, are you there?
I am here, Brother Bullock. How you doing?
I am doing fine. I'm still hanging in. I'm still sucking air, and it's another beautiful day in our neighborhood.
All right.
And yourself, how's everything going?
It is going. It's hot in the Central Valley, and we're just all trying to stay hydrated.
Exactly. You are correct about that, because no matter how you turn or how much air you turn on, you must stay hydrated in order to beat this heat.
That's right. That's right. So if anybody says that global warming and climate change is not real, they need to come to Fresno, California.
You got that right. And one thing is a fact. Climate change is definitely real. And speaking of the climate, I'm looking at these folks who are trekking into Death Valley, California, because they want to check out the extreme temperature. And today, they got up to about 131 degrees.
Whoa.
Now, having lived in Las Vegas, Fresno, a few other places that can get pretty warm, I'm not trying to see it. There's nothing impressive about hot air. The only thing hot air will make you do is go find some water, some shade, or a swimming pool.
Now, Brother Tony, are these people scientists or?
No, they are not scientists. They are not scientists. They are just, as Sly the Family Stone would say, everyday people. It seems that, you know, let's just keep it real. Some people out there believe in doing the dummy. And
okay, so this is code for white folks. I'm sorry.
Basically,
I'm
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And unfortunately, those scorching temperatures have claimed some lives. So I don't get it. You know, like I know, living here in the Central Valley, the last thing we getting ready to do is go play in the sun unnecessarily.
You know, since we're talking about this, I want to find out those people who are going to Death Valley, if they have seen the show on PBS where there are people down in Texas, they look to be Latino. I think it's either Texas, New Mexico, or Arizona, where they are checking. They're going into the desert too, but they are checking for remains. And it was very heartbreaking to see some of the things that they found. So it is strange to me to just go into Death Valley just for the heck of it.
Well, we know it's strange.
Yeah, we
know it's strange, but again, some folks do this craziness because it's like, well, you know, it's kind of a cool thing. There's nothing cool about the heat.
Right.
Nothing.
Right. Well, you know what? I think they probably got the message because this month, I think it's the month of July of 2023, is supposed to be the hottest month on record, period, ever, across the globe. So I hope they got the answers that they were looking for.
You know, that's what I like about you, Sister Reed. You know, you always try to throw the benefit of the doubt out there, but I'm just going to call it what it is. Stupidity is stupidity. And this is why they have some of the problems they have.
Brother Tony, stop it.
Leave the dog alone. The dog bites. Oh, no, let me pet Poochie on the head. Arr.
Now, see, if we use your theory, that's the theory that says, and I agree with you, but I'm just saying if there's a sliver of anything, your theory says, see, this is why black folks are not in more horror movies, because we're not going in the house. We're not going in there.
No.
It's very simple. Yeah.
I seen a guy yesterday on Twitter in Florida. And that should tell you everything you need to know. Four or five crocodiles in the water. He trying to pet one crocodile on the head and then gets surprised when Mr. Crocodile tries to eat him.
Okay. That's kind of funny, though. That's a little bit.
Yeah, it's funny, all right. Yeah, it's funny.
Thomas Smith says you don't pet a crocodile.
What part of
wild animals? That's why people that go swim with sharks.
You just said it. What part of wild animal did you not get on the memo?
See, well, as my grandma used to say, heaven only knows. Lord have mercy, Jesus. I know.
Then we have Brother Mitch McConnell. And to be honest, Mitch the Bitch has done some cruel things to black America, but
yes, he has.
I don't wish nobody, bad health or anything of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But karma did come tap him on the shoulder right at that microphone.
Yep. And it wasn't the first time that it came.
And obviously it was not the first time. And, I hope the man gets better. I hope he has an envisioning. But, let's not be like Steve Scalise. If something happened to you and then you come back two or three times worse.
Well, he said today jokingly that he got sandbagged, that it was all the Democrats' fault. It was all Biden's fault. I mean, he didn't say that, but he implied it.
Well, see, again, you can play the role if you want to, but karma make a believe out of you.
Well,
and that should have been a hint.
This is the whole problem with people who behave with racist intentions and behaviors. Eventually, karma is going to come for you, so don't be surprised when it happens.
No.
He's not wishing something bad on him.
If George Wallace could see the light, I don't understand why the rest of some of these folks can't, because sooner or later, your time coming.
Well, I think it is, Brother Tony? I think that they know their time is short, and so they are trying, those who got their hand in a till somewhere, are trying to get as much money and get as much resources, personal resources, as they can before the final gavel gets knocked down on them. That's just me. That's what I think is going on.
Like I say, you always try to see the side of the madness. But
I do.
That's why.
Somebody to give me that same benefit of the doubt, no matter what. And it's funny that you say that, Brother Tony, because you and I have had this discussion before about what is the nature of man. And I think I shared with you before that I basically think that man is evil. that man has to work. Mankind has to work at being good. Now, some people might say, you know, that's original sin and all of that, and all of us are sinners, and we got to work, you know, for redemption. I don't know. I mean, I'm a Christian. I believe in God, and you know, I consider myself a spiritual person, but I really believe, based on what I've seen in my 65 years, that mankind is basically evil, and that they have to work at being good.
That is a daily struggle and a daily battle. We do have to work for the good of what we do on the planet. And, you know, again, that's where, and I'll say what I always say, that's where free will comes in. You were given free will, and what you do with it is your business. But always remember, there's a price due for everything. That includes free will.
That's a universal law. So while I try to give somebody that sliver, I'm not expecting anything good to happen to them. But there's two sides to every story. And I believe that not all bad people, I mean, nobody is all 100% bad or 100% good. There's good in some bad people, and there's bad in some good people.
Well,
so,
exactly. That's the real deal. That's how it works.
That's where I'm coming from. So, but these races make me tired, Brother Tony, and I'm so glad we're talking about some things tonight.
Yeah, I'm just going to be honest with you. When it comes to them, you know, I understand what you say about good and bad, but when it comes to them folks, to me, they're unredeemable that's the path they choose, and they want to stay on it no matter how you try to help them work around it.
Well, I'm not trying to help. I will say this. I want to ask you this. Did you happen to see that quote from Tucker Carlson? I guess it appears in his new book that he's selling that I'm sure is going to make him richer than what he already is, from Fox News. Tucker Carlson says that he's not a racist, that if he was a racist, he'd admit it. And I almost fell off my perch because we all know that they never admit it.
Yeah, I saw that mess.
Yeah, and just for clarification, listeners, there is a difference between prejudice and racism. Prejudice, you can be prejudiced against anybody. People who wear pink, people who have purple skin, people who have red hair. That's a prejudice. But when you get to the point where you look at a redheaded person and you say, you know what, I'm not going to hire you or rent to you or finance your car because you got red hair, that or the color of your skin, I'm not going to rent to you, hire you, or finance you because your skin is black. That is what racism is. That is when prejudice goes to a different level.
That brand new level.
Where they take action against you. So I just want to be clear for the listeners that is what I'm talking about. And Tucker Carlson has initiated more violence against black people, LGBT people. I mean, you name it, and he's been against it with his conservative behind. So that's where I'm coming from, y'all.
Yes, he has. And that's why we are doing the subject we are doing tonight, the whitewashing of black history, American style. Call in number. Folks, you can always hit us at 563-999-3043. With that said, Sister Reed, we're going to get into what we do.
All right.
The Google definition of whitewashing is the deliberate attempt to conceal unpleasant or incriminating facts about something or someone. This has become so common that we are completely unaware of it. And instead of being taught what really happened, and you know this to be true, we always seem to get a sanitized, cleaned up, cherry-picked version of what history truly is. And now that we've gotten older, we are really starting to find out that a lot of stuff we thought was true was written a certain way so that white America could look back and say, see, we really not as bad as you thought we was. Yeah, you know, we brought your people over here in slavery, but we taught them some skills. We showed them how to do some things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the thing about whitewashing history, it helps preserve that white savior complex. That's a common trope here in America. You know, and which white person is shown as saving or helping a person of color who actually didn't need their help. And that prominent teaching goes down in our schools.
Exactly, Brother Tony. And this is what we're going to be talking about tonight, and we're going to be taking a deep dive, because what you've explained is what I call white-splaining of history, something that makes it more acceptable, not for us, but for white people, because there was a sociologist, I believe it was back a few years, her name is Robin DiAngelo. She was a white sociologist, and she talked about white fragility. And they sanitize it to save their own feelings and the feelings of their children. That's what this whole problem is about critical race theory. But I digress. What I want to say is, for some of us that are like my age, I didn't start learning about black history, real black history, that were in books until I got to middle school. But before that, thank goodness that I had family members who were in the Black Panthers who kind of broke
amen,
it down.
Amen,
for
and amen.
Yes, about our history and things like that. But when it comes to textbooks and things like that, you got people like Mitch McConnell, who just got tapped on the shoulder by karma, who is totally against teaching critical race theory in schools. Why? Because they don't want their children learning about all the atrocities that have happened. And when you mentioned those enslaved Africans that they brought over here, Brother Tony,
right.
These white folks who created chattel slavery were so slick. These colonizers were so slick that they would go to certain parts of Africa to kidnap or purchase certain people and certain tribes, because they knew these tribes had the skills that they need, whether it be rice, growing and harvesting, iron work. They knew where to go to get these folks. And people also want to forget, and I know because we talked about this on the show, Brother Tony, that the Moors, black Moors, are the ones that pulled Europe out of the Dark Ages. So they can't try to lie now and say, oh, we're going to teach you some skills so that you can be useful and it's going to be beneficial to you. No.
Exactly. No. Well, I see that we have a call already, Sister Reed. So
what?
We'll see what's,
we ain't even got deep.
We ain't even got deep into the subject, so let's see what this is going to be about. All right.
Well, greetings. I think I joined you all before. I go by the name of Brother Warren. I'm the host of a blog talk program called New Orleans Wake Up.
Yes,
and I said,
are.
And I was
Warren.
On my way out to go to a happy hour, but I'm gonna stay in now and delve deep into this with you all tonight.
And we're going to keep you on the line, Brother Warren, because I've been checking your show out. And let me say this. I appreciate your show.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate you. Mm-hmm. And, man, look here. We got to put it out there. We got to talk about it. And we are so glad to hear from you. And for callers and listeners, this is Brother Warren. He's down there in the Big Easy. He does a show called New Orleans Wake Up.
That's right.
New Orleans Wake Up. See, I got it right this time.
Just
like me and Sister Reed, the brother speaks the truth. He don't whitewash it. He don't sanitize it. And we appreciate that. So, Brother Warren, you see what we're talking about so far. So what you got to say right now for a moment?
Well, one thing, I'm sure you are familiar with the fact that the only black Republican congressperson from Florida, has also recommended that the wording be changed as relates to slavery. He's getting a lot of pushback from DeSantis' team. And there's a black conservative group called, I can't think of the name, they have also come out and criticized the wording. And so now what you see is some of these black Republicans are being told they got to toe the line, just like they accused the black Democrats of having to do. It's going to be interesting, so get your popcorn and watch this.
You're right. It's going to be
Byron Donalds, who jumped up, decided he was forever Trump, supporting 45, and he was on DeSantis' team all of a sudden. But then, like you said, we have this rewriting of black history in Florida. Now, Brother Donalds, you know, he got something to say about it, and the minute he did, they came at him. They jumped on him with both feet. The black professor and a few others who was on this board, and there's a sister who is a Democrat in the state house in Florida who was on this board, who sat there and helped put this mess together.
That's right.
And then went back like,
she's
a historian, all right.
On that board were historians or have been trained in
in
black American history.
Well, let me tell you what I think is going. Let me give you the full context of what I think is happening around the country now. We have to understand globally, the United States has lost its influence globally. The U.S. is really being isolated. The countries we call the third world countries that are referred to the global south, they run into Russia and China. In fact, Russia just hosted an Africa-Russia summit today in the last few days. And China is wooing the Caribbean nations. So the U.S. global reign is over with. Now, an empire don't go down without a fight. So number two, the jobs that this elite group of whites sent overseas ain't coming back. So it's a lot of angry white people with no jobs here. So you have to give them something to feed off of to prevent them from revolting. And so as always, they feed them black people. So critical race theory, critical race theory and all this stuff, this is a culture wars is basically what they're giving these white folk to get excited about.
We've done shows on that.
And so we have to put all this in a larger context. The final analysis, white people have to remind themselves they're superior, and so they need to try to put us in line to keep that sense that they're still on top. But it's all crumbling down in 20 feet.
That's true, brother. That is true, and that's another reason why the U.S. needs to continue to support Ukraine with military support, training, ammunition, all those good things, because there's nothing that Americans like better than a war that they are helping with.
That is a true statement.
Well, you know, the war drains the coffers for home. So, you know, as the U.S. put all that money, because they're trying to prove to themselves, the elite class is trying to prove that they're still on top of the world. They're not going down without a fight, but this thing is going down. This thing is going. Black people have to be very careful, because even the white liberals that we kind of depended on are going to start showing their fangs and horns also.
Well, that's already happened, and you are correct about one particular thing. We got to do better. We got to do better ourselves. Black America has got to stop all this infighting. We've got to stop going back and forth with black women. We got to start marching together, because if we don't, we will end up back in the very thing we fought hard to get out of. Now,
well, And that's a problem, Brother Tony. But remember, we have been taught to do this to each other. We have been taught not to trust one another. We have been taught all these things. And I agree with you that we need to start growing together, or we're going to wind up in a concentration camp on a plantation somewhere.
Exactly. Which is why I said what I said. The thing about it is, just like all of a sudden you have black Republicans who at one time this would have been said, they wouldn't have said a word, they'd have just marched on. But for whatever his reasons, Byron Donalds decided to say, you know, okay, you want to feel that way, that's cool, but you need to reword this. And the minute he did, like I said, they came after the man with both barrels. And I think, in all honesty, he's not going to change parties or anything of that nature. But I think now he's starting to see it for what it is. So all of this, I'm black, but I'm still a Republican. No, they did you like Tim Scott. Every time they needed a black face, they trotted you out and said, look, there he is right there.
Right. Right. But see, the thing is, too, is that he can see, Byron Donald can see what's happening on the ground in Florida better than the rest of us. I mean,
he can see that DeSantis' campaign
is unraveling, that he's fired a bunch of people. He doesn't have the big money donors coming in. And so he can already see the writing on the wall. Now, maybe Donald is just waiting for DeSantis to drop out because he knows that poll numbers don't lie, and he can't beat Trump in the polls. Trump is going to fall on his own sword because he's got, charges being piled on as of today.
Exactly. So, but we're not going to make it about politics. We're going to jump right back into the show of what we were talking about.
Well, I want to say that.
Go ahead.
With the curriculum, I think, too, when you look at how racism has been very beneficial to the white group collectively, I think the fear whites have is that if their children see humanity in blacks, then if they get into positions of power and responsibility, they might try to be fair towards blacks. And I think that's the real fear. Being fair to blacks may make them lose the advantage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is why you have a lot of this going on right now. And as we were talking about whitewashing, or as my co-host likes to say, white-splaining, one of the prime examples, one of the main figures America did this with was Dr. Martin Luther King.
Right.
Who was definitely more than the I Have a Dream speech. And he was more than a bus boycott.
Yep.
J. Edgar Hoover and his FBI did everything under the sun you could think to this man. They threatened this man. They taped this man. They bugged his home. And as quiet as it's kept, they took pot shots at him. You're not going to tell me they didn't shoot at this man, because they did.
They bombed his home
twice. And they never supposedly figured out who did these things. That was our good old FBI.
Right.
So,
and that, you're right, Brother Tony. They did the sanitized version of Rosa Parks, too. She was just an old grandma, tired lady that didn't want to give up her seat on the bus, when that is not who Rosa Parks was.
No, she was not. She was much more than that. Nothing about this is new. For example, now, Sister Reed, you know, you and I went to a school called Thomas Alva Edison High.
That's right.
But Thomas Edison himself stole the idea of electricity from Lewis Howard Latimer, who was a black man.
Latimer, that's right.
And we never, and you know for a fact, we never heard his name in history.
Nope. We just saw his picture hanging on a wall. Nope.
Until other black folks
I'm talking about Edison, not Latimer. Yes.
Until other black folks start going back to research this man.
Mm-hmm.
And
now,
what city are you guys from? We reside in Fresno, California.
Oh man, look. I got family all there. In fact, I have a cousin, assistant principal of a school there in Fresno. You know, Louisiana people, that's our second home.
There's
California, the Bay Area.
Texas folks,
yeah.
too. Yep.
That's where my folks came from, Louisiana and Mississippi. From there to the Bay Area.
Yeah.
My folks are from Texas. Y'all from the east, and my folks from the Bay Area. My folks came from Texas.
We came, some of us came, you know, we came here in 68, so from the Bay to here.
Yeah,
well, my folks
I have,
came to Fresno in 48. They came here in 48, right after the war.
Yeah, I have an aunt lives in Clovis.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good old Clovis, California. Redneck capital of the world.
Yeah, it used to be a sundown city. I'm not sure if it is now, but obviously not. If black folks are living over there.
Nah, they can't play that role now. Too many of us out there.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Well, that great migration. Oh, yeah, yeah, that great migration, people from Louisiana and Texas, you're right, they went out west, and a lot of my folk did go there after the war, World War II, and the parties in the 50s, and in fact, I have cousins in Fresno, and a lot of them first went to the Bay Area, Oakland, San Francisco, Los Angeles.
They all went to L.A., Oakland, San Francisco, because they could get work in the military factories, at the Army Navy bases, at the fisheries. In Southern California, a lot of them went that way because they needed them to work in those aircraft factories, in those military factories on the bases.
Or at the port,
so there was work for them, and they were given it.
Yep, that's true.
So both of y'all went to school in Fresno?
Well,
we went to elementary school
at George Washington Carver Elementary School, and then my family went to the Bay Area during the 60s, so I finished up there at Farragut Elementary, but Edison High School is the home of the Tigers, and it's majority black folks by the time we got there.
That's in Fresno?
Yes. In Fresno.
Oh, okay.
It's the home of the Tigers.
Well, one family and two of them. Including my cousin.
What's your cousin's name?
It's a Gucci's. Well, my cousin Bessie Gucci, she died, but she had some. But they lived there in Fresno, right there.
Are you related to Keith Gucci?
Well, all I know,
okay,
cousin
so
Bessie
know
and her husband. Her husband was the Gucci. And they had daughters and the sons and.
I got a feeling he's related to Keith Gooch.
Yep. I'll tell you what,
Bessie got a grandson that was a basketball player, Quincy Pondexter.
We know Quincy Pondexter.
We know
Quincy. That's my cousin.
And I work with his wife.
That's my cousin.
Yep.
But, yeah, like you say, it's a small world.
It's a small world. Getting back to
it. Wow, small work. But see, this is what I always say about black America. No matter where you go in black America, you're going to run across somebody who knows somebody you know. And that's a true statement.
What do they call that? 6 degrees of separation?
6 degrees of separation. It always works out that way.
Yep.
Getting back into our show, not only, you know, with Thomas Edison, but then there was a brother by the name of Benjamin Montgomery. He created the steamboat propeller, which was able to work in shallow water. It wasn't a new idea, but it was greatly improved by him. And the only reason he got denied a patent was because he was a slave at the time. You know, a slave, the people who learned viable skills and got taught everything when they got here in America and down in Florida. Right. Then there was Augustus Russell Pope, black inventor, who also happened to be a woman, who created the first electric alarm system in 1853. And she was able to get her invention patent but you'll never hear about her in a history book.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a global problem. Like Brother Warren was saying, I was doing a little bit of research about Brazil, and I did not know. I mean, I knew that there was racism in Brazil, but I didn't know it was like this.
Oh,
that, yeah, as early as 20, or I should say as late as 2015, there was a play in Rio de Janeiro that was inspired by some historic figures, but wound up being played by white actors. And leading up to this,
yep.
I guess the end of slavery happened around 1888, and there was some people of African descent that migrated from the state of Bahia and settled in an area called Little Africa in Rio de Janeiro. Well, at the forefront of this community were what they call aunties or tias, who were leaders in that region. They were entrepreneurs, so they made sweets and they created a dance that everybody knows as samba, with samba music.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a sister by the name of Tia Fiata. Her name was Hilaria, like Trump's wife, Hilaria Batista de Almeida,
yep.
Born 1854 and died in 1924, who migrated to Rio at the age of 22. She became a legendary figure, a pioneer in samba music, but we never hear about her when Carnival is going on in Rio. White splaining.
I had a chance to visit Brazil a couple of times. I visited Salvador and the state of Bahia and, of course, Rio.
Mm-hmm.
And what I thought was interesting about Brazil is the food. It's kind of similar to like in New Orleans, because they eat like red beans, and they put the pork in the red beans with rice.
Right.
And, you know, and so very interesting, because, you know, like slavery ended there in 1888, and then in slavery in Puerto Rico and Cuba, it ended around that same time. And so we don't talk enough about the black experience being basically a global experience.
Yes. And I tell you, the white folks in America, Brother Tony's right, they had it down to a science. These people that created chattel slavery, because people forget, and Brother Tony, you and I have talked about this before, that there has been slavery in the world ever since there were human beings. But chattel slavery is the only form of slavery that you, from the time you're born to the time you die, you're a slave. And any issue that comes from your body is also enslaved automatically.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, so that's the American style slavery.
Right.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm glad that you and my brother there, Brother Warren, took it there. Let me hip you to this. Two people I'm getting ready to mention, Frederick Douglass and a Cuban general by the name of Antonio Maceo. Okay.
Maceo. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Maceo. They're very rarely mentioned together, but check this out. One of the problems that scholars had with these two men was there was no way that they could be as intelligent as they were, being that they were black. But truth of the matter is, Frederick Douglass and Antonio Maceo were both mixed race, Afro-Cubans, okay?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the when they both passed away, someone decided to measure their skulls, and in the case of Mr. Maceo, some Europeans, and he was known as the Bronze Titan, because he had been this Cuban general who had always just been great in battles.
Mm-hmm.
He had rejected the terms of the 1878 pact in Zion because they didn't guarantee independence and the total abolishing of slavery. But when that man passed, His body was exhumed because they were going to move him to the site where they had built a memorial for him. But these European scientists decided to measure his bones and try to see if he was more white than black by measuring his bones.
You just
now, Dr. Henry Louis Gates described it as this. Imagine if Ulysses S. Grant had died during the Civil War and scientists decided to cut him up like a frog in biology class to find out if his skeleton looked more English or more Irish. He said what was done to this man was scandalous, and that is. And they measured not only his skull, but they dug up Frederick Douglass and measured his skull because they wanted to see, okay, why were these people so intelligent? They had black in their system, so it must have been the white part.
You know, one of my father, one of his grandmothers, his father's mother, she was from Cuba, and she came to New Orleans in the 20s with her sister. They had worked for a white family in Cuba. And when the family returned to New Orleans, they came to New Orleans because at that time you had a lot of New Orleans companies and businesses and stuff had, they were also there in Cuba. And my grandmother died in 1980, and we didn't get a chance to visit Cuba for the first time until 2008. And I had a chance to learn a lot about Antonio Maceo. In fact, the city where my great-grandmother was from, Santiago, that's the airport there is named after him.
Okay.
I learned about Antonio Maceo. But you get Cuba's a lot of black people. You go there right now, it's pretty much majority black because many of the Cubans that left initially were white Cubans.
Right.
My great-grandmother would talk about how they had discrimination in Cuba.
I've heard
and
that
how,
too.
You know, blacks couldn't go here or there, and these certain type of at the time when she was living there, because you know slavery had not ended. It wasn't too long ago slavery had ended.
Right.
That's true.
Right.
Yeah.
You know this idea, my brothers, of anti-blackness is really at the core of everything that we're talking about. That's why European colonizers wanted to go to Africa and slice her up, you know, like a pig, and I'm going to take this part of the Congo, I'm going to take Kenya, I'm going to take, you know, they did this, and they had no problem. And I always wonder, like, why? And, you know, they keep repeating this whole thing, like in America. I just read something today that really broke it down for me about white supremacy in the United States, and they've been teaching this whole thing in textbooks that many of us went to school with and learned, whether it was in college or high school. And really the idea of white supremacy in America came from this Canadian white guy named John H. Van Every. And he is said to be the father of white supremacy. And they say this because, and I just need to read this, it says that the whole idea about democracy as it was starting to be practiced in the 17th and 18th century in the United States was a new thing. Remember, Europeans had kings and queens and all that stuff. So it was argued that if no slaves existed, then the class-based structure of Europe would have been transitioned over to America, kept and developed in the American colonies. But with the African presence, the descendants of white Europeans saw that the difference among white people was virtually non-existent compared to what the perceived difference between themselves and African Americans. And this allowed democracy, and I'm putting this in quotes, although they didn't, this allowed democracy, which was unpopular, to develop and flourish in America. So they needed somebody to take the place of European peasants and they could see that whole difference in the races and things like that. But I also want to put in my own caveat, because whiteness, as they describe it, this anti-blackness, is a white man's invention as well, because for a long time they didn't want Irish. They didn't want Russians. They didn't want anybody from the Eastern Bloc. They didn't want Chinese. So, but for black people who are easily identified, we were always at the bottom of the heap, so to speak. So.
Well, you know, the people who came here to the United States came from Europe, where they believed in that caste system.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, they got over here, it was just them, and then they decided to, you know, to bring us here in slavery. And like you said, we would always be at the bottom of the barrel. And so they figured, okay, well, we're here, we got somebody we can lord over, that'll be our caste system. But then they decided, well, you know, we're going to put these railroads in. And then when the Orientals came over here, they hired them to work the railroads. It was like, okay, well, we got them over here now, so all right. We'll let them be a little bit higher than the black ones. Then Ireland had the potato famine. And what happened? They jumped on boats and headed for the U.S.
Yep.
Italians decided to get up out of Italy, jumped on a boat, headed for the U.S.
Yep.
Along with them
came
the Polish, Russians, Germans, and anybody else who felt like where they were was no longer good enough. And, of course, who stayed at the bottom? We did.
Hello. That's right. That's right.
Not by our design, but because they designed it that way for us.
Yes.
Think about how they redlined our neighborhoods, how they fought to keep us from learning how to read and fought to keep us from having the vote.
Yes.
All of that.
I don't know if you are familiar with Gerald Horn. He's an African American historian. He's at the University of Texas at Houston, I think. He's one of the most prolific historians since W.B. Du Bois. He refers to the term as settler colonialism. In other words, the white settlers.
Yeah.
Okay. Different groups from Europe came to settle here. But I think what we need to face the fact that we're in for a rough ride, because white people see themselves as having a movement against what they felt has been an attempt to make them feel guilty for being white.
Right.
So the DeSantis approach is going to be something they all are modeling across the country. And we're in for a very rough ride.
Well, we've always have been. And the thing about it is, even before DeSantis, since 2021, we have had 44 states introduce bills that deem CRT, or critical race theory, as the thing not to have in your state, not to teach in your school, not to allow your good little white children to be put through this, because they're just too fragile. They're too fragile.
Exactly.
They can't go through this. They can't listen to what we did as a people towards these other people.
This is not the first time that the political pendulum has swung this way. Remember, right after World War One ended, around 1918, 1919, and 1920s. Remember the big rise of the KKK to the point where they had their, you know, so every time there's a political movement like this, you're going to get all of these hyper-racist white folks coming out of the woodwork like cockroaches, and January 6th was just, you know, the tip of the iceberg. But the thing, what they don't understand is that black people, and I'm sending this out to all black people already have been ready. I'm talking like the Deacons of Defense in the 1960s, you know, And I say from somebody from the west side of Fresno, you got to bring ass to kick ass. You know, if you are talking about shooting at somebody, then you better get ready to be shot at.
Let me be honest,
so,
and I'll tell you what I always say.
Yeah, this is not me.
I'll just be honest and say what I always say. I am not my grandparents. You can catch these hands. There is truly a movement. I mean, you know, the funny thing is a lot of us don't talk about it. You know, I always say, if you stay ready, you ain't got to get ready. And the truth of the matter is, as CRT is being talked about and discussed in more and more states, Black America has got to get to the point to where we take a true stand. You got to stop believing in allies and him and Han, and we have to work, like I said, we got to work together in our own village. We got to build up our own village. Why do you think I always say, take your folks to the range. It is time to get ready.
Yeah. I think that a very simple, cost-effective way to resist is if Black people return back to what we were doing in the 80s and 90s, and that is buying books.
Yep.
Particularly historical related books, and all, and just everywhere you look, Black people got their head in the book, all at the bus stop, all on the bus, all in the restaurant. That'll drive real crazy.
Yes.
And you're right about that, Brother Warren, because we got away from that. I remember when I lived in Vegas, there was a brother by the name of Samuel. He had a bookstore called The Native Son. And I would go by and check on this guy every day because he's a retired firefighter. And what he was doing in the bookstore also was training young Black men in how to take that firefighter's exam and that policeman's exam. But every time I went in there, that bookstore was crowded because he had a book corner for young Black people. And I'm talking like young kids between like 8 and 12. Then he had the teen section. Then he had a section for like the parents and the older folks and the grannies. That bookstore stayed packed.
Yeah.
And like you said, we got to get back to reading. The internet is one thing, but you got to get your head back into a book.
Right,
because see, part of this is about controlling the physical movement of Black people.
Exactly.
So if black people simply have an actual book in their hand, 100 Years of Lynchings, or any book that deals with the topics that they find most uncomfortable. And everywhere you look, Black senior citizens sitting down reading a book, had to drive them to get.
Well, there used to be the joke that said that if you want to hide something from Black people, put it in a book. But I have never found that to be true. My mother had an 8th grade education, and she loved to read. And because I saw her read before I even was old enough to go to school, I love reading. And I, you know, went on to be an English major at my college and so on and so forth. But I agree with you, Brother Warren. I spent a lot of time when I lived in the Bay Area at Marcus Bookstore, both in San Francisco and in Oakland. I know Brother Tony knows where both those locations are.
Yep.
Blanche, who inherited the store from her parents. You're right. We have to be ready. And what was it, a post that somebody put up from Malcolm a couple of days ago? It said, we're not outnumbered, we're out organized. And that's true.
Yeah, that's what it is. So what's happening now is they're creating a lot of brush fires around the country, and we trying to run at every little brush fire. Somebody saying something in this state, then somebody say this and say, and we kind of like, and what I'm concerned about is these younger generations are not equipped or prepared to deal with what is actually coming. And I can't even begin to start to talk about all the stuff happening every day with remarks. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, one guy has a radio show in Tennessee. He referred to the White House press secretary as a buckwheat.
Yes, he did.
Yes.
Then you got Then you got all in these state legislatures. They doing all kind of stuff to the state legislature, telling them stuff and all that. It's just really an avalanche is coming down.
Yeah, you're right. But you know what? You know what I think? My brothers, if we could if the Nation of Islam under Louis Farrakhan could organize the Million Man March, there's no reason why we cannot disperse our people in an organized way nationwide to deal with this. I really believe that we can do it.
We could do it, but Sister Reed, what did you say earlier? It comes back again to trust and rowing together.
Yeah, you're right.
Let me say this. Like Brother Warren just said, Brother Warren said he's worried about this younger generation not being ready to deal with it. And the truth of the matter is a lot of them are not. Why? Because this past generation, when they start rising up, these folks start telling them, there's no need for you to be upset or be mad at little Johnny. Little Johnny is your friend. You and little Johnny are equals. But you and I both know when they get out there into the working world, little Johnny gonna get that job. You gonna get sent packing. You will still be the last hired and the first fired.
That's right.
Did y'all see the story about a nursing home? These employees of the nurse, these black employees at a nursing home, have a class action suit because they were called the N word and they were being told stuff, be a good slave, all that kind of stuff.
I saw that.
It's off the chain.
It is. For some of us who have work sites at a nursing home, I will tell you, and this is a true story, just a very, very short story. I worked with developmentally disabled adults in this nursing home site for United Cerebral Palsy. And I have this middle age, she had to be 45, 50, white woman who was legally blind, loved to look at magazines. And so I brought a bunch of magazines in, Good Homemaking, Better Homes and Gardens, and I brought some Ebony and Essence. Do you know that this woman who could barely say anything or read or write would take the Essence and the Ebony and throw them over her shoulder because they have black people in them? She only wanted to see magazines with white folks.
It was okay if
we were serving her lunch or helping her do a craft project, because she figured that's what we do. We're servants.
Exactly.
But she didn't want to know I don't want to look at that. Over her shoulder it would go.
Well,
yeah.
Think about this. Let's take it back. Mm-hmm. Think about this. Remember when they started busing people in Boston? Remember how that went down, how them folks lost their mind because these young black kids was coming into the neighborhoods. They started attacking the buses. They started attacking
Boston
these kids when they got off the bus.
Yep.
And I remember the stories of later down the line, after they finally got stuff settled and, you know, the federal government had to step in, troops had to come in, and then all of a sudden it became, well, no, we weren't that bad. People said that about us, and we still looking at news reels of y'all throwing bricks at buses with little black kids on them.
So
y'all
wasn't that bad. At our high school, I worked in the office the summer that I graduated, and they were supposed to start busing to Edison the following year, the year that you graduated.
The year
and
I graduated.
I can't tell you how many white parents called up and said that they didn't want their children going to school with a bunch of monkeys or N-words and blah, blah, blah. And in addition to that, they were bringing groups of white parents over, walking them through classrooms over there, like we were an exhibit in the zoo.
We didn't want them there anyway.
All this fits in with the discussion that they don't want to be talked about. Now, in New Orleans, the first school desegregation was in 1960. And it was one of them was a little black girl at one school,
And then not too far away was three black girls at another school. So Ruby Bridges is the one that's well known. And so
right.
Ruby Bridges had to be escorted by a U.S. Marshal to school.
Oh, yeah.
And so the white parents, and this, at this time, this area of, it was called the Ninth Ward. It was working class whites. And they said that those white ladies cut the food spitting. And they had one white family sent their little girl to school. And that white family had to leave the neighborhood because the mother whites threatened to kill them.
Wow. Oh, yeah, they showed up. They showed they natural behind.
Yep.
Yeah.
That sounds
yeah.
about right. But, you know,
and
if,
so,
you know what? If Ruby could live through it, then they should be able to learn about it and stop whining.
But guess what? The books about Ruby Bridges are banned in Florida.
they're
taking
are.
The books. They're taking
yeah,
the term books out of the library.
They banned those books in Florida. They banned that. I'm going to tell you one that found out they banned, and it's still blowing my mind. I know why the caged bird sings by Maya Angelou.
Oh, yeah,
and I'm like, how in the world? Now, I can see my book getting banned, The Spook Who Sat by the Door, but that's a whole nother story.
But
did you know I did a panel discussion? I did a panel discussion on the movie The Spook Who Sat by the Door on my radio show.
Hey, that's my book.
Yeah, I love the book.
Find my show. Yeah, go look at my archives and find The Spook Who Sat by the Door panel discussion that we did on the movie.
I will be going to look for it.
I will, too. And the thing is that, you know, if we were not a strong people, we Africans, if we were not a strong people, they would have already wiped us out, just like they tried to get the Native Americans. And, hey, they're still here, too. And some of them are hecka rich because they got that casino money. You know, and, hey, even they're not all rowing in the same direction. Why? Because, you know, that human greed and everything. But
you know, the truth of the matter is,
we are not going anywhere. We are going to be fighting for our rights. So they better get a clue, buy a vow.
And that's the truth of the matter. We have got to stand our ground. We have got to fight, like Brother Warren said. We can't keep running from brush fire to brush fire. We got to make a stand and put all these fires out at one time. And in order to do that, we have to work together, not apart, to get it done.
I agree.
Yes, I know there are some people out there who holiday allies, but as I always say, Sister Reed, everybody want to be black until the police come. And when they do, then they want to shift gears.
Right.
This is my side over
here. You know, people might think that we are exaggerating this, but I just want to share with y'all some of the 10 examples of whitewashing, at least here in America. And I'm just going to go down the list. American history, cowboys. Movies, we see them, hey, ain't no black cowboys. Let them tell it. Religious, hey, when you look at pictures in Catholic churches, all you see are white Madonnas and white Jesus. Well, we know that Jesus, we know that Jesus was Middle Eastern and he was not blonde with blue eyes. Holidays, you got Santa Claus, some white dude in a suit coming to, you know, give us stuff. Yeah, that ain't going to happen. Then you got literature, you got music, you got advertising, you got the school systems that we just been talking about, you got childhood toys. They hold this whole thing about Barbie. When I was a kid in the 60s, I didn't like Barbie because she didn't look like me. But they weren't making a black Barbie in 1958 when she started, so hey, Christy didn't come along till way later. Then you got Hollywood, Birth of a Nation, Cleopatra being played by Elizabeth Taylor. And last but not least, you got all that white splaining on the evening news.
Exactly.
Because let them tell it. George Floyd was just a blurb, and, you know, he was resisting arrest, and that's why they had to manhandle him and choke his ear off and kill him. So,
now, Sister Reed, let me ask you this. I know that you always go check out the slideshow when I put it in.
I do.
Did you check it out this time?
I did.
Did you see the first slide put up?
The first lie was Martin Luther King.
All right. And then after that, did you see the one of the movie for John Wayne called The Searchers?
Yes, and that it was based on a black brother named Brett. I can't remember his last name. Yes.
Exactly.
I saw that.
Exactly.
And that's what we're talking about. So when white people say to me, you know, you guys complain about everything. Well, you know what? There's a reason for that, because y'all have lied about everything.
And stolen everything.
There's a reason for that.
As quiet as it is kept, and I say this all the time, and I'll keep saying it because I have family members who lived it. The West was tamed by black folks. We drove them cows down them cattle trails.
One in five cowboys was black.
Yes, they were.
One in five cowboys.
Yes, they were.
Black.
How
and
do I know
I know
this?
What you're talking about, because I have relatives who, you know, one of my mom's uncles, so we're talking turn of the century here.
Yeah.
Was a bronc buster. That was his job. And that's all.
See, that's,
he
that's
did.
Where that's where Grand Nana's side of the family come from. You know, that's why we got that property out there in Eagle, Texas. And we're Byron the Buffalo and the rest of them kicking it right now.
Wow.
Now, what you talking about? My family's got 22 acres right outside of Bryan in 6 Mile, Texas. I know
yep.
what you're saying. And it's true. And that is how
yeah.
we're gonna win, y'all. We're going to build that generational wealth. We're going to keep our land. We're not going to get rid of it. We're not selling it. We're keeping it. So, yeah. This tonight's show has been a really, you know, I
yeah,
haven't
you,
been
you,
this fired up.
You were
I'm
getting
sure
ready to say
something.
You were getting ready to say something, Brother Warren? Brother Warren, you were getting
yeah.
ready to say something?
While you all were talking, I was also thinking about what we're missing, and I say we, African Americans, we're missing a national dialogue with our youth. And I was
yeah.
just thinking about I was just thinking about the letters NDWA, something like National Dialogue with Our Youth. In other words, we need to really have a nationwide circuit. But we're talking to African American young people about what probably to expect, the climate they're
right.
living in. Listen to them, and through that dialogue, and the dialogue should take place on Twitter, YouTube, radio stations, live forums, traveling. Because in all of this political preoccupation with Democrats and Republicans and culture war, we're really not dialoguing with the youth.
No,
is that dialogue with the youth that could circumvent what they're trying to do in these schools?
Who a lot of the young people are listening to are the rappers, the people in hip hop, the trend makers, and the people on YouTube and TikTok. You're right, brother. You're right. We need to do a better job
yes.
to get messed up.
Yes, indeed, we do.
Tony was lucky. We grew up around Black Panther. So it was a little bit different for us. And people
well,
want to
know,
see Panthers and Thugs. Believe me, Panthers, Huey and Bobby met at San Francisco State University, not the
well,
educated.
Well, look, Cousin Bessie, one of her daughters was married to a Black Panther. His name was Clewis. Their last name was Clewis. Let me see, Jimmy Clewis? And that daughter died, but and they had a son. But yeah, she had Bessie's daughter was married to a Black Panther.
Now, is that in Oakland or L.A.?
But Bessie and him used to originally live in Oakland, and I don't know when they moved to Fresno. But one
okay.
of her daughters, let me see, was it Doris? She married Jimmy Clewis, and they had a son. And I think he got it.
Yep.
You know this,
huh?
Tony?
Doris Poindexter.
Tony, you
yeah.
know them? The name, okay, because that name doesn't sound familiar to me, but Tony knows a lot more people than I do.
Okay. Well, let me see. Doris would have been, but that child would have been a Clewis. But I don't remember what Quincy mama, because I'm related to Quincy Poindexter mama, which would have been one of Bess's daughters.
And then they had Velda. Velda's another daughter, Velda. Then one daughter died. So, yeah, so that's just one group of the family that those Gucci's. But anyway, that was a Black Panther. That's why I brought that up.
But, you know, right. I like that thought because Sister Reed and I work with a group of young people, and that's our people, mm-hmm. Fresno Freedom School. And these are the things, the tenets that we try to relate to our young folks. We definitely, and me being that old school, stand up for yourself, young Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
I try to instill some of those tenets in them. But you're right, we need to get back to our young folks. We cannot allow the streets to take them anymore. We cannot allow them to be blinded. Because trust me, their life cannot be like little white kids' lives. They're not going to get the same mm-hmm. treatment. They're not going to get the same things happening for them on jobs or in school.
Mm-hmm.
These things are not going to happen for them. Their road is going to be different.
Exactly.
And we have to prepare our people for these things to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We do, because mm-hmm. we have to love on our kids and build that foundation for them, because the world do not love our kids. We know that.
No,
don't be afraid to talk to your neighborhood kids. Don't be afraid to talk to the kids in your neighborhood. You got to hip our young people to what's really going on in the world.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Florida is really have a stinky smell now because of all of the fascism. They call it fascism mm-hmm. when you're trying to dictate a historical interpretation,
exactly.
and you, you know, so it's just really, but it's so glad to see that DeSantis' campaign is spiraling downward for destruction.
Yep.
You know,
so it looks like woke is kicking his behind.
Yeah, I was talking with, I have a relative who is in their final year of teaching at FAMU, Florida A&M, home of the Marching 100.
Uh-huh.
And I was talking with her, and she always tells me, she said, you know, the dummy has done it again.
Mm.
I said, okay, hit me with it. What's going on? And she goes, you know, he's threatening to withhold funds from FAMU because most of the students here, she say, in fact, 100% of the students here aren't thinking about voting for this guy. No one is paying attention to his Don't Say Gay madness.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to try to come at our teachers for still teaching what they teach. I know
mm-hmm.
it's critical race theory over there. It's a Black university, dude. What do you think we don't teach?
Yeah, common sense.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, Brother Warren, we appreciate you stopping in tonight, and thank
yes,
you for taking up the time with us. I have checked your show out, and I will keep checking your show out.
Pretty
my hat's off to
yeah.
you. And you keep doing what you do, bro. We appreciate you. We're
yeah.
glad to know someone
yeah,
out there
I,
like that.
I continue to follow your show.
Thank you.
Hey, appreciate
thank
you, man.
You so much.
And Sister Reed, you know what we getting ready to do. So do your thing, girl. Do your thing.
All right. Well, everybody who knows me knows what I say every Tuesday and Thursday. I always say it's about a mindset. So please, 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 I implore you, stay Black until we get back with you. Brother Tony.
All right, Brother Reed. Brother Warren, do you have something you'd like to say in closing?
Oh, just enjoyed the conversation. We'll continue to follow you.
All right. I'm going to say what I always say. Each one reach one, teach one. Those of you who are proficient with your arms, take your folks to the range. Get them ready. Get them trained up. Get them licensed. Start a neighborhood watch. Start a cop watch. Watch the people who are watching us. As we get deeper into 2023, heading into 2024, if you're not registered, get registered to vote. Pay attention to these folks running for office. You got a lot of folks who like to do the bait and switch. They run as a Democrat and turn into a Republican. Whoever you vote for, that's your business. But Pay attention to what you're doing. Make sure you vote. Make sure your people vote. Keep your loved ones close. And until next week, we'll holler.